Hi there, it's Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. We are always fascinated to talk about the state of Boston music and Boston music history with people in the business. Terrestrial radio is a huge part of that. WBCN, WFNX, WZLX. If you grew up in Boston, those stations were a seminal way to discover new bands that inspired so many musicians. I met Angelle Wood at a State of Live Music event that she hosted at Isotope offices in Cambridge when I was trying to learn a bit more about, well, the current state of live music. Whatever your thoughts are on the Boston music scene, Angelle is doing her part to share the legacy and tell the story of Boston rock and roll that continues to inspire musicians young and old. Angelle began and still is passionate about radio and has worked at all the legendary Boston radio stations, including WBCN, FNX, and ZLX, and she is host of Boston Emissions, which began airing on WBCN back in the 80s and has been instrumental in introducing and establishing thousands of bands from Boston and New England. And she also hosts and produces the great Rock and Roll Rumble that just celebrated their 40th anniversary. We plan on publishing a retrospective and history on the Rumble in the next month or so keep an eye out for that. But it was great to talk with Angelle, who works hard to promote and support great Boston rock and roll. So here is our conversation with Angelle Wood, recorded at Woods Hill Table in Concord, Massachusetts.
My name is Angelle Wood. This is Boston Emissions, music from your town, or the town next to that. Rock and Roll Rumble lineups, we'll roll them out on today's show. It starts April 4th, Once Ballroom in Somerville. 9 nights, 4th through the 26th. Sponsored by Jack's Abbey, thank you very much. Some studios will be in the house on the ground, helping me out. My support team. I got a team. I got a crew. New music from Yanni Gordon, Aloud, from the Left Coast, sent me their newest. We will play it, Dutch Tulips.
You live probably closer to Jerome Dupree than I do. You know Jerome?
Oh, yeah.
He lives in Carlisle.
Yep.
And also, who else lives in Norm from This Old House lives in Carlisle. Huh. And, of course, Chuck Clow lives in Carlisle. So, there you
Have
go.
You been there a long time?
I've been there since 2010, but I grew up in Concord, so I've been here in the area for
so
a while.
So you like this area. You're never going
to
go.
I do. I never intended to move back to Concord, but, you know, things change. So, where are you from originally?
Groveland, Massachusetts.
Groveland?
Which is near,
where's Groveland?
It's near West Newbury and Haverhill and Newbury and Newburyport.
Right, so off of 495, way up there?
Yeah.
Kind of near Methuen? Is that near Methuen?
Yeah. Okay. Not far.
How's the mic, okay?
Yeah.
She's already had experience with this because we did a quick talk at once.
Not with the booms, though.
Not with the booms, no. We did a handheld at the time. But she's a boom expert.
I like this little mini filter you have.
Yeah.
I have the big silly one that bends all over the place.
I like these too. They're very cool and they're unobtrusive.
Yeah.
They're just a little expensive. They're more expensive than the other ones. Mm-hmm. For what these are like $70 each, these little screens.
Mm-hmm. Pop.
Which is way too much.
Filters.
But what are you going to do? So you know what I thought I would do?
Yeah.
Is maybe we could talk about the Rumble first and get that out of the way.
Okay.
And then we can talk about all that is Angelle. Is that okay with you, Ron?
Whatever you want, boss.
All right. So we already talked about what came up to the point where it was the night before. It wasn't the finals. You only had one more night, I think. I think it was Friday
when
night
we spoke.
That I talked to you. Yeah.
We spoke on finals night.
You spoke on finals night?
Yeah.
You weren't there.
I was there one night.
Oh, okay.
I'm about to learn a lot about the Rumble right now. I'm just going to sit back and listen.
So that was finals night. So
yeah.
I had a great time at all of the evenings.
Yeah.
And the finals night was really the most special night for me. And I know it seemed to be for you.
And why?
Well,
I'm curious.
You know, it was...
I promise not to take over your interview.
No, it's fine. I like this. because it was a culmination of a lot of investment on my own part.
Yeah.
Never mind your part.
Yeah.
I'd heard almost every single one of the bands. Mm-hmm. multiple times. I was a judge. So it was really great to finally kind of celebrate the end of this long road.
Sort of the reward for all of that.
Can you take us through a little bit of that, just for the people listening to this, like the Idiot's Guide for the Rumble? Like, what are the criteria? Like, what's the big picture here? So it's like, how many bands and how do you judge them?
24 bands are selected and invited. That doesn't mean that the 24 bands that showcase during the Rumble are the ones that I started with. It's what we have narrowed down to. So I start with a huge list. And for 2020, the list starts now. It's bands that are playing now, bands that are reaching out to me, bands that are sending music to me. You know, and I don't just mean bands. It can be, you know, people who perform under their own name or whatever. So it's not just bands. It starts with people sending music, actively playing out. You have to have a presence and you have to have released something. You know, this year for 19, I had 2 years of bands to cull through.
Oh, right.
Because
it wasn't a Rumble.
Because we didn't have a 17. Right. So, because I didn't want to rule out anybody because I skipped a year. So I have a long list and I go through and I just start vetting bands. I listen to everything and I go on, if they have YouTube videos, I see what they're doing online and I look at all of their social media and listen to their music again. And I try to keep in touch with people and say, hey, what's going on with you? To nudge them a little bit. If it's somebody that I'm interested in, I try to nudge them a little bit. They, I don't think bands ever realize this, by the way, what I'm doing.
I don't
think they ever realize, hey,
how could they?
What's going on with you? What's the band doing? This, it's my own curiosity, but it's definitely because I want to find, I want to nudge them and say, stay busy.
Someone's paying attention.
Stay busy. It's stuff that I like, but because it's the Rock and Roll Rumble, it really has to be a band situation. It can't really put a singer by themselves up there.
Right.
The scoring criteria is not going to work in their favor. I also hear, like, what about instrumental bands? It's just...
not really rock and roll.
I'm paying a disservice to an instrumental band by putting them up against everything else.
Sure.
You know, I also get like, why does it have to just be rock and roll?
Yeah, well, it's the Rock and Roll Rumble.
Well, it doesn't have to be just rock and roll, but a couple things. If you're an MC and you have just a turntable or something like that, again, it's like the instrumental band situation. I'm not setting you up for success.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to change the way we do the whole thing. I'm not going to change criteria to have an instrumental band in there. I'm not going to change criteria to have, you know, somebody who just plays with a laptop, whatever that looks like.
It just doesn't work. I'm not sure if it's a requirement, but everyone on stage played their instrument. If there was anything that was pre-recorded that was played, I didn't notice it.
Rules against filling in your set. There's no rules against tracks or anything like that. But you can't stand up there with a mic in a track.
Right. And everybody
plays. It's just not going to work. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to have a band, however that looks.
Well, you know, it makes sense for like what you're doing to judge the 24 acts in a very fair way to each other. There's, the music is so diverse. You can't sort of, it's not America's Got Talent. These days, frankly, it's nice to say, this is rock and roll, and it's going to die if you don't do it.
But there's still so many bands who are making rock music. Why would I turn my back on that? Everybody else says rock is dead. I don't think that it is.
Yeah.
No, that's what I do. I mean, I've built a career on rock music. Why would I pretend to be something I'm not?
Well, you know, it's hard to define, I mean, these definitions of music.
It's tough.
I mean, it's tougher nowadays.
Yeah.
And there were edges of rock music in there. I mean, certainly you had Bricks and Mortar.
It's probably the drugs. Do you taste blood on your lips? It's like pennies and dirt. Well, that's a little taste. You're bound and you're laced on hands and knees. So love me. I need you, baby, like I breathe. I need you, baby.
Very heavy, but they were great. And then you had someone like...
name like Bricks and Mortar, you cannot not be wrong.
Right. And, you know, he was a cool
dude. They did not
come
to fool around.
No. And they were very nice people. I liked them a lot. I talked to them afterwards.
They look scary because they're very menacing looking.
Yeah.
But they're the nicest people you'll ever meet.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's sort of like Chuck.
That's right. I am looking scary. It's just because I'm bald. That's why. People think I'm scary because I'm bald.
Yeah. So that you put on a hat and glasses and then people can talk to you.
Yeah. And then people think, oh, I thought you were badass because you were bald.
Yeah. That's Everyone thinks you're badass.
But I'm not. I'm a puppy dog. But then you also had Corner Soul, which is a little more poppy, but, you know, they had that kind of, maybe there's a better example of maybe another side of the spectrum there.
Outlived 30 winters, my God. It spread over this gospel kitchen. Where are the cameras? I staggered out with spotless palm. Shivering from a sickness I took years to perfect. Someone sighs, I might break the sweat.
They had a couple of things going on, because some of their recorded music sounds very like 1970s Bowery, New York City.
Yeah.
So much rock, but then they also had a little dance, glam, right, punk, funk thing going on.
You're going to get pushback, though, right?
Like, always.
If something is very poppy and someone thinks that they're a rock band and wants to be in the Rumble,
mm-hmm,
it's interesting, like, what defines rock?
Because I do.
I decide if I think it fits or not.
Yeah.
What you've done at BCN, ZLX over the years, mm-hmm, you've really done this for what, 25 years
since,
or so?
Since FNX, since 1998 when I started working in commercial radio in 98 in college.
So why is the Rumble important? That's a big question.
That is a tough question. It probably is the longest running showcase of bands and independent music left in the country. No other city does this.
Really?
You know, it has a branded, solid history. Anybody can throw a battle of the bands. You can have, you know, the applause-o-meter.
Right.
Scream really loud for your favorite band.
Right, right, right.
No disrespect to anybody who wants to do that, but that's not what I want to do, because I feel like the Rumble still, even all these years later, has credibility. And that's why I am so strict about every single thing.
And Ron, so you know that there's a conversation that happens before the Rumble. All the judges are pulled into a room.
Mm-hmm.
We're strip searched.
Mm-hmm. Fingerprinted.
And they laid down the law very nicely. You can't tell anybody you're a judge.
You have to be in the room when the band's playing.
That's right. You can't leave the room.
Yeah. The whole time.
The whole time the band is playing, you need to be watching them.
I couldn't do that.
You can't get sloshed.
Probably have to pee.
No, don't get drunk.
Don't get drunk. And she has, what do we call them? Judge police, right?
Yes.
Judge cops.
I have people that look for you and make sure that you're paying attention.
Not on your phone.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not outside or you're not upstairs or stuck in a corner talking to someone, because, you know, at the end of the night, you're going to go and score these bands.
So how many nights were there? 10 nights?
9.
Did anybody get pulled? Any judge?
Nope.
Well, that's good.
No. All the judges there, they're all adults. Everyone is like a professional doing something in music.
What's the criteria?
Yeah, so
what do they go through? What are the categories?
Tell how we number from 1 to 10.
Oh, like the scorecard?
I like how you say we, like you're like this.
I was a judge.
He was in my judge's table.
No, I know
you're judging
you
right now.
I know.
Well, it starts with song structure, you know, material, songwriting, vocal effectiveness, stage presence.
Yeah, how they relate to the audience reaction
to it. Then you have a score sheet and stuff like that.
Exactly.
But then there's the one, the special question.
There's a bonus category.
The wild card.
Which is for, you can give points for anything at all that's not covered in the top questions. Somebody had a cool t-shirt on of your favorite band and you gave them 3 points for that. That all the bands had matching Converse All-Stars on.
Corner Soul. I don't know if you noticed it, but he did something in the finals. Like every time they would play, from the first night to the wild card to the finals, their performance got even more glitter and more colorful and more things. He did something that was so cool. He had like one of those little hand siren things that go, like a little thing. And he had it up to the microphone. And then when he was done, he went like this, and there was glitter in it. So glitter went all over the... That was like serious planning.
Did you give him points?
I wasn't the judge that night.
Oh,
but I was hoping that's a great example.
That's why everybody has to be in the room.
You have to be in the room for
because
that.
Because somebody was outside smoking or took their bathroom break during the set, they would have missed that.
I know. That's a very good answer. I like that answer. And the thing is that the one thing I noticed...
I don't remember what it was, but okay.
Well, it was, what was the question? It was really good.
Why is the Rumble important?
Why is the Rumble important?
Oh. It has credibility.
Yeah.
Longevity, too. I mean, what is it?
40 years.
That's amazing. I mean, that's what mm-hmm. you started with mm-hmm. the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
We're like the first...
First official in 79.
And then Till Tuesday and Dresden Dolls. Yeah. And
so there's a lot of history here, obviously. Tons. And not just kind of some fun Boston bands doing the thing, forgot about. You know, I mean, there's history in the people that really cut their teeth and really actually their stamp in Boston.
You're right.
Or put their stamp on Boston.
Yeah.
What do you think you'll do different next year? Anything?
I'll do something different. I'm not quite sure what that is yet.
I did notice that you got emotional. I actually videotaped it. I can send that to you if you want.
I don't want to see that.
It. But you got emotional at the end.
I did. And it took me till the end because I really do usually get a little weepy when I see the bands playing and see everybody just...
During.
When the bands play and then I see the audience, the whole thing about the Rumble vibe is the bands and the fans, they're just vibing off each other. And that I've seen bands go from down here... Yeah. And then they go to the Rumble and they go up here. Their performance goes from here to here because everybody's feeding and the energy in the room. And I instruct bands, I try to the best I can, bring your people, at least for prelims night, let people know because it's going to make everything that much better for you. You're going to play better. Your fans are going to bleed into the other fans. And it's going to be the sea of love.
Yeah. Other fans are going to be your fans.
That's right.
The only band I did not see more than once was the one who won, who Set Fire, when he saw them that night.
Okay.
But every band I saw upped their game the next time I saw them. Let's move on to Angel Wood.
Okay.
I met you initially at the State of Love Music in Boston.
Yeah.
But that was actually kind of my first introduction to the community that is in Boston.
Really?
Yeah, because we just started the podcast.
That was kind of an experiment, I think, for a lot of us.
And I thought it was helpful for me. And you got a lot of different people coming up and airing their grievances and from a lot of different genres mm-hmm. and types of music. And I mean, that's where I met Alyssa. Spectre.
Yeah.
That's where I met her.
Yep.
I can't remember who else I met, but there was a lot of people there. I'd be interested to like go back and try to remember who was there, who I've now like either had on, mm-hmm. who we've had on the show or not.
Where was that?
That was
like
Isotope.
A lofty place, right?
Yeah.
Like a big loft.
Yeah. Is that Isotope?
Isotope's cool space in Cambridge.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's where we met, and that's where you were the main host, weren't you?
I wanted to have some conversations about what was making everybody feel disenchanted.
Yeah? Did it help?
I think any conversation helps. I don't know if we solve anything, but I think any conversation's helpful. I don't know that the goal should ever be solving everything, because I don't really think that's realistic. But I think giving people an opportunity to talk about things and maybe try to come up with some suggestions, I don't think that's ever a bad thing to do.
Well, it certainly brought to the forefront a lot of questions that we brought up, like equity mm-hmm. in various different ways. Mm-hmm. Equity for artists, equity for venues.
Right.
And music equity, places for hip-hop artists and rappers to play, and how they don't have many places
really,
to play.
Which is really, really tough.
Yeah.
And still is.
Yeah. But it was interesting to see that, and all those topics that were brought up have been echoed through almost all of our conversations that we've had. It was a very good introduction to what we would eventually find out from the people we talked to.
Do you carry, like... a rock and roll hat all the time? Is that what you wear? Or do you have other areas of music that you're involved in?
If I could pride myself in something as trying to advocate for the community, my knowledge base is rock. in varying styles, whatever that means. Mm. I really want to try to advocate for the community in terms of always talking out loud about how we should have places to see music and make sure that everybody feels like they're going to be able to see a show and not get felt up by somebody or screamed at by somebody. That was a big part of why Calling All Crows was involved in the Rumble, which we can talk about later if you want to.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's really important that, you know, we have conversations about all of these things. There are people in the community that are a lot more knowledgeable about some other things than me. I'm always learning from all of those people too.
There's something special about being almost like a rock ambassador. Is it like there's other people that there'd be like a hip hop person that is looked as like respected as someone that knows all about that space.
Yep.
And then you have, you know, maybe like a jazz leadership, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need some of those people that have seen it through the lens of history in Boston to sort of know how to connect with people. You can't just have all the people on the ground and all the bands that assume that they're just going to go into these venues and cross-pollinate with each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you need some of that leadership.
You're right. And there are definitely more conversations we need to have, but there comes a time where we have to put some of this stuff into action. And I think we're still working on that. I think we're still working on how we can better serve the hip-hop community in terms of making their performances as accessible as everyone else's. And there is definitely much conversation that needs to be had about representation. There's a lot of conversation in the city we need to talk about in terms of what's happening in venues. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to touch on this again because it's a big part of what I've been working on, is making sure that we're aware of what the plans are for these venues if things are happening, if people are getting assaulted. And this is anyone. I'm not just talking about women. I'm talking about anybody that is at that event. If someone's, you know, getting threatened or spoken to in a way that has no place, we really need to figure out how we're going to deal with that. And that's been something that I've been thinking about a lot, because there have been a lot more things that have happened throughout the city. You know, I don't know what's happening at the Middle East. A lot of people don't know what's happening at the Middle East. A lot of people have stopped playing shows at the Middle East.
Because
we don't know.
There's more issues going on there than other venues, you think?
Yeah. There's been issues as to whether there's been sexual assault or assaults allegedly taking place there. I don't really know, because it's been kept very, very quiet. I've spoken to people who have tried to investigate it. It's been really troubling. So,
well, what's also troubling is
we have no idea.
They're part of the culture. If you're out there and you're holding bands, you're serving drinks, you're part of that process.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, you need to have a mechanism.
Mm-hmm. And it's important to figure out, you know, if we're going to these venues, and, you know, if people are sending their children to these venues, or if people are sending their loved ones to these venues and people are supporting these venues, I think it's important to find out, what is your plan if something does happen? And we try to do that with every night of the Rumble, with working with Calling All Crows, and once committed to training their staff with bystander training. And I would really like to put a call out to other venues to follow suit, and other members of the community to take bystander training. And that could just simply be, I'm watching the situation go down and I'm not sure if these two people are comfortable, if this is a friendly situation, or if this is kind of crossing the line where this person's maybe too nervous or they don't really know what to say. Mm. So those are some things that come from that.
Can you talk about Calling All Crows? Can you talk about that?
It's an organization that works within the music community to make harassment-free spaces. Mm. And I think the term safe space has been bastardized a lot in the media. But what it is really about is people being able to go to a show or go and enjoy themselves without feeling like they're going to get picked on or harassed. Or that's why things like girls rock camps and safe spaces exist in the first place. So women and girls can go in and make music and enjoy themselves without this, I don't know, cloud of having to do something other than just make music. Yeah. It doesn't even necessarily have to be like someone putting their hands on them. It's a matter of harassment in terms of, well, you're not doing what I want you to do, when you're not giving me sex or whatever attention. It's important for it to be understood that we're not going to let this stuff continue to happen. You know, I've had many instances where I'm bullied on the internet. I'm spoken to in a way that I know a man would never be spoken to. I've been yelled at. I've been called every dirty name in the book on the internet publicly for whatever reason. I told someone no, or I asked a photographer to move, or I didn't play a band. I've been cornered in venues. You didn't answer my email. You didn't play my music. Like, can you please get away from me now? Mm. What are we doing here? I am in no way obligated to play you, respond to your email, or really have this conversation with you right now. And it gets a little tense. It can get tense to where you're like, I don't even want to go out sometimes because I don't want to be, you know, cornered by somebody who's like, what are you doing? How come you didn't pick my band?
Right. Violence isn't just physical, right? So
it absolutely is not.
And it can instill fear in a place where, you know, we keep on talking about wanting to have all ages venues.
It would be wonderful to be able to do that.
You can't have all ages venues if you're going to have that kind of action going on. So, yeah, we talked to them at the Rumble, and I really like what they're doing. It seems like a no-brainer for every venue to have these people come in, train, because a lot of it's just they just don't know what to do in these situations. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. Do you remember the website off the top of your head?
Callingallcrows.org.
Good.
A lot of people say Counting All Crows. That's a very easy mistake
to make. I know. Calling All Crows. Yeah, they're very nice people. I think it was it Kim?
Kim. She's the executive director, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, so I want to talk about radio.
Okay.
You grew up in Rochester, right? But you listened to the radio as a child, right?
Yes.
They had radio out there with the horse-drawn carriages?
I'm old as well, and we had radio.
So
FM.
FM, right. Yeah. But I remember listening to
WCMF.
I remember listening to AM.
Rochester, New York.
Yeah, there was a time where it was a thing.
RKO, I think, played music or something like that. I can't remember. But anyways, you know, BCN, ZLX was a little later. Remember WCOZ?
Yes, I do. Kick-Ass Rock and Roll.
That's right.
Wow, can you guys do that again? That was awesome.
I was in middle school, and we had their t-shirts, and that was like a big thing.
Get in trouble for wearing those in school?
Kick-Ass Rock and Roll, probably. Anyone in our general age group, radio was everything. I would even tape radio.
Mm-hmm,
that's
me too.
How, and you know, top 40 and all that kind of stuff.
That's your first podcast, Chuck.
Yeah, it was the first.
It was social media. I mean, it was where you found out what was going on and who was doing what and where people were going to be and what people were talking about.
Yeah. And you got into it in, you said 98 is when you got into it? At college?
College, yeah.
So you were on the college radio station? Yep. Where did you go to school?
Yep. New England Institute of Art.
Okay.
It was Massachusetts Communications College in the Back Bay for a while. And then it became New England Art Institute. It does not exist anymore.
That's okay.
It was for-profit colleges, you know.
Yeah. But you didn't do it in high school? You didn't do radio in high school?
No,
they have a really awesome radio. They had the radio station here. I think you've told you this. You know Sam D'Souza? She works for W something.
Mm-hmm.
Begins with a W, I think.
Yep.
That's just a
guess. Most of them do.
Not a K.
That's just a guess.
You just eliminated half of the country.
I'm being facetious. But WIQH, they had it there when I was in middle school, and it's still going strong. And a lot of those people who were radio DJs at the time still do it professionally.
Mm-hmm.
But radio was such a big part of our lives, at least terrestrial radio. When you got into it in 98, what was the situation with terrestrial radio at the time? This is all pre-internet, right? So
it was all pre-internet.
Like, well, 98 wasn't.
We were just starting to use email.
Oh, that's right. 98 wasn't. That's right.
98 was...
I mean, it wasn't like it is now.
Not at all.
It was just emailing and some basic websites were out. Exactly. I'm sure the radio stations had websites.
Well, MySpace was around that time?
But it was still full on.
A little after.
Maybe a little after?
Maybe early 2000s.
It's hard to remember.
Yeah, it was. I interned at FNX in school, and then I got hired as a part-time DJ, and I just worked my way up. I worked my way through. I did everything.
As one should.
That's what I was taught, you know? Take everything. All the shit shifts. If they want you to work 6 o'clock in the morning on New Year's Day, you do it. Because eventually you're hoping they'll recognize your hard work and your dedication and give you more work.
So you're doing like the 2 to 5 a.m.
I was doing
shifts?
Everything. I did everything.
How many hours a week would you be in the station?
Sometimes I would work all night, go home, shower, sleep for a half an hour, and go to work at a day job. So I would be working 90 hours a week, 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how I survived some of those times. And I worked all the way up to mornings, which is a grueling schedule in and of itself.
Right.
But I loved it. And apparently I learned I didn't need a lot of sleep because I would, you know, go do the morning show, go do like some band meet and greet and interview a band in the afternoon, go see the show, and then be back to work in the morning to edit up the interview and be ready to go.
That's a full-time job right there.
I wanted to do the thing. Yeah. I wanted to be on the morning show. I was that person. I was the entertainment reporter, whatever you want to call it. So back then, meet and greets were set up through radio stations. You didn't have to buy them then. So, you know, you could do an Interpol meet and greet at Avalon and interview the bands and go see the band at night. Maybe they would come to the station. it was fun.
Well, you cut your teeth.
It's as a
they
grueling,
say.
Grueling schedule. And I look back at that now. I'm like, wow, how did I do that?
You said that you knew ahead of time that maybe you'd get more work. But I don't know. It's interesting. Like as a kid or as a young person, like when you do this in your 20s.
When it was happening, when I was in it, I wasn't particularly unhappy about it. You know, working the morning show, getting out in the afternoon, going home, napping or being lazy on the couch and got a call from somebody at the radio station and said, how quickly can you be at Avalon to interview Chris Cornell and Tom Morello? I'm like, I am out the door right now.
So you're just kind of on call all the time.
For some of those instances I was, because when there's a band in town, you just never know what their schedule is going to be like. So sometimes.
So you had ZLX and then...
FNX.
I'm sorry.
FNX first.
FNX first.
And then I left FNX and went to ZLX. And then at the same time, I started working at BCN because ZLX and BCN were owned by the same company, which was CBS Radio.
Okay. Mm, yeah. Now, I just saw the WBCN, the American Revolution.
How was it? It was like the early days, right?
Yeah, very early days. Yeah. It was really good. They did a lot of Boston history in it. And like the Harvard, when they took over the Harvard, what do you call it when they take over a building there? They took over the building there, and some of the people who worked at BCN got into the files and found out like the CIA and Harvard were working together.
So BCN was the early WikiLeaks is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, it was really interesting. I had no idea like all these things kind of were going on.
These are the things that really need to be captured though. These are the conversations that I want to continue to have with people. It's like, how did you get started? You know, we can talk all the time about what you're doing now. Yeah. I mean, everybody wants to talk to Dave Grohl about, you know, what are you doing? It's like, I want to know what Dave Grohl was doing like a long, 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 long time ago.
Well, you know, that's interesting because I saw there was a big internet blog fight. Not maybe it wasn't that big, but I saw it where someone said, I wish people would stop trying to be all nostalgic about the good old days of the Rat and everything like that.
Why?
There are so many good musicians and bands now. You should be more attuned to what's going on today.
Yeah, but how do you think all this happened?
I hear you.
Because of all of that, because of the BCNs and the Rats and the channels, that's how we have all this now.
Right, exactly. I don't see anything wrong with nostalgia. Yeah. If you don't want to listen to any music today, then that's your
prerogative. The only problem is if you have people that will say, well, it was only during that time. I don't care how you convince me about bands these days and rock these days. They don't know what they're doing. That's that's bullshit. Because
that's a lazy answer for people to be like, there's nothing good anymore.
You can really appreciate both. You can't move forward if you can't appreciate the history as well.
Why would you not want to know, though? Why would you not want to know about history? Because if you're not curious at all and if you don't read, then you're going to be a dipshit like the president. You can cut that out if you want to. But if you're if you're not curious or want to learn about anything.
But it's also assuming that you even know that these kids nowadays know who Mission of Burma was. They may have never heard of them.
That's how
so
I
it's
feel,
new music to them,
but
right?
That's how I feel about the Rumble. I feel like as we get older and we're 40 years removed from where it started, so many people don't know. I mean, even music writers in the city of Boston don't really know what it is.
Yeah.
And I want the opportunity to tell them.
Jeb Gottlieb was there.
Well,
Jed knows what he's doing now.
He knows.
Yeah.
He knows.
We were standing there at the Rumble, and we looked over, and Chuck said, I see that guy everywhere.
I'm like, who is he? Why do they look so familiar?
Is that Jed Gottlieb?
Yeah.
And it was just funny because I've only seen him like, it was like when Facebook becomes a reality. And like I remember seeing maybe the Herald had a picture of him or Facebook or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not sure, but I think that's
Gottlieb. I mean, that's who it is.
He gets it.
Yeah.
He gets it. There are a lot of writers who get it.
But you know, it's also you see these, and I don't want to call them old timers because they're not much older than me. But there are people who've been in rock, who've been musicians their entire life, who are still in music. In one way, shape, or form.
Why not?
Of course.
I feel bad for the people who are wishing they could and aren't anymore. They're like,
oh, God.
I sold my stuff. Why?
I know.
Why?
I know. And I give them all the credit in the world if they're still doing it and they're still playing or they're still going to shows.
I have a tough time with ageism in the music business.
I bet it's a big deal. Yeah.
I hear it all the time. Oh, old person going to win the Rumble again? Mm. I don't know.
Who cares?
Maybe. Yeah. They might be better than everybody else. Like, why would I not invite somebody based on their age? Like, why?
Well, I'm intrigued by not only the old people, but the young people. So do you know Circus Trees?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So they blew me away at the Sinclair the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Circus Trees has a 13-year-old, I think a 15 and a 17-year-old, and they're all, you know, they're all sisters, right? Blew me away. Oh. Not only were they good and they were innovative, mm-hmm. but I was like, wow, it's almost like they're triplets, like they can like sense each other. It was really cool.
I was listening to it while setting up here. I was listening to them on Spotify. Yeah. They gave me vinyl. They had vinyl, which really impressed the hell out of me.
Yeah, and speaking of old and new.
He was listening to them back from the Cape tonight. We were both listening to them at the same time. So it's two 50-year-old guys, at least one 50-year-old guy who was digging
Circus
Trees.
Yeah.
But we digress.
But I saw them the other night and I thought of the Rumble.
You're completely allowed to get into rock and roll at 50 years old. You're completely allowed
Absolutely.
To dig it.
But yeah, so seeing that documentary and also going to David Bieber's warehouse, which you got to see as well, it's important to remember these things and also introduce people who had never heard of these bands that played in the 60s, 70s, 80s, wherever, mm-hmm. to hear the bands that inspired the bands that they're listening to today.
Right.
Right. So right. I think it's really important to talk about these things.
Well, like, it's also important because we're gonna die. God. I mean, like we're there's little kid. We,
I
like
know
we're
who you
I'm,
are anymore, man.
I'm gonna be hitting towards 50.
You've been listening
soon.
To too much Circus Trees, I think.
No, but you know, like our generation X, and like right around there is gonna die, and so you have to pass it down.
Well, it's dark. Like, I do agree. I know what you're saying. And as a matter of fact, the more intelligent and accomplished young musicians that I've met know who the Descendants are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right?
Or they know who Missioner Burma is.
Right.
They know their history because they listen to these bands that created what eventually morphed into whatever they're listening to today.
It's really important to celebrate the history of Boston music for a number of reasons, because there was a time where this was a real breeding ground, if you will, for a lot of the rock and roll that became, I mean, when you think about a band like the Cars, they're world famous, but they started here.
Right.
Aerosmith, same thing. They're world famous, and it's not that I'm going to play a bunch of Aerosmith on my show,
mm-hmm.
but I completely recognize their contribution, and they're a Boston band. They're from here. They bring attention to this city still when people talk about Boston.
I always compare Boston to New York, and that when I say, oh, did you ever go to the Rathskeller? It's kind of like the CBGBs of Boston.
Absolutely.
It was the same bands playing in both. You know, that history, it's not told enough. The CBGB story is told a lot, and I think it's starting to be told. I think it's starting to be told more. Ron and I will see what we can do about
You know, there
too,
are things but. That, you know, somebody like David Bieber or Oedipus or Carter Allen or any of the people, and these people just happen to be related to WBCN, but there's so many great stories and all the stories about all of the venues. The music scene in Boston was always vibrant and full of something to hear and something to learn about. And I don't think that that's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
It's different. Things have shifted. I saw a lot of bands when I started going to see Boston bands. I would go to the Linwood a lot. So when you could go to Boston proper and see music, Bill's Bar, the Linwood,
yeah.
Everybody would go to the Deli House after. I mean, those are some of my warm moments in Boston rock. I mean, the Rat was gone then.
Yeah.
You know, I went to the Rat, I think, once.
Yeah.
Maybe twice, definitely
yeah,
one time.
Once.
And it closed
mid-90s?
97?
Yeah. You ever go to Charlie's King of the Hamburger?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was great. Yeah. $3, you get a hamburger, fries, and a salad, and a Coke.
What would be great for the city is to have more sustainable, smaller venues.
Yes.
I know that we're flooding the market with all these larger venues.
Right.
That's great. If there's another venue to compete with the large scale House of Blues or something like that, sure, great.
Well, you know, we have a very good person in government right now named Kara Elliott Ortega, who I think is aware of all these things.
What are they going to do about it?
I don't know, but I know she knows about it.
Because that's the question I want to pose.
We talked to her about it. We talked about equity of, you know, different types of artists.
And housing is a big problem.
Yeah, well,
I'm sure that's...
you know, I know the EMF building also went kaput, right? And they just opened up another one, right? The New Alliance. Is that another?
Well, no. New Alliance is a recording studio and an artist space. It's not rehearsal spaces anymore.
It's not rehearsal spaces at all.
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
Right. No. EMF was its own entity in terms of, you know, renting spaces for artists and rehearsal spaces for bands to play.
I meant more people who were displaced by that closing. That
New Alliance found a space in Somerville that they were able to build out. It was just there. They have...
This had the opening, right?
Yeah. They have spaces to record, you know, control room, live room, surrounded by really just artists in their office space and their wares. I mean, they have some beautiful art hanging on the walls.
Okay.
And
but so there's no rehearsal space.
There's no rehearsal space.
So that's still an issue.
It's going to continue to be an issue. A place like Jam Space is closing down.
Yeah, it's
closing. In June. So that leaves the Sound Museum in Brighton. Charlestown is still active as a rehearsal space, I do believe. And there's some studios that are building out in Malden and possibly other locations. So there's opportunity. There's still opportunity. But as things become less and less available in Boston, Cambridge, Alston, Brighton, Somerville, you're going to see things go farther and farther outside.
I see it. It's important and it's brought up all the time with different artists that we talk to.
Yeah.
Back to terrestrial radio.
Yeah.
Where is terrestrial radio going?
Mm. Nowhere.
What's non-terrestrial radio?
Well, what we're doing right now.
Like satellite radio.
Non-terrestrial.
I thought radio was, okay.
Am I defining that correctly? Terrestrial radio would be like FM, AM.
Yeah.
Yeah,
commercial terrestrial radio
and would be different.
You know, certainly we have the great NPR stations that are considered non-commercial.
Mm-hmm. So when you say going nowhere, websites. You mean that they're not leaving, or do you mean that they're
no
not
radio's
prospering?
Never going to go away? Right. It's just going to be different.
Okay,
they're
so
just going to change the way they program it, and it might be less and less local as time goes on, and more and more consolidated to where you have people, you know, doing multiple shows from different cities all over the country piped into different cities, and that's going on now.
Who's your biggest competitor as far as people listening in their cars?
On-demand programming. It's terrestrial radio's biggest competitor. People are spending money digitally rather than your traditional ad buys on radio stations. People still do listen to radio. Kids still do listen to radio.
Yeah, my kids
just
do.
Just differently. Radio's never going to go away. It's not really ever going to disappear. People are like, oh, radio's dead. It's really not. It's just a matter of how you consume it or how they present it to you. Their programming is, you're not going to hear BCN programming to where they're jumping in and they're like, just got this, Joe's band just brought this in, let's hear it. Those days are over. That free form shit that was cool, that's never going to happen ever again.
Real, that's too bad. I like to, I mean, I want to be surprised.
Playlists, everything is researched and talked about and talked about and talked about.
I mean, that was a great thing about the Rumble, and that was a great thing about Thursday Night. I mean, I knew a couple of the bands up there, but I didn't know Circus Tree. I'd never seen him before in my life, and I was knocked my socks off. And some of the bands I saw at the Rumble knocked my socks off.
Yeah, I think radio is a lot like landlines. Radio kind of reminds me of that. All these podcasts and Netflix and streaming and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And like, you get in the car, you're like, you don't know what's going to happen. You're like, oh, that's cool.
But that's what I love about radio.
It becomes
radio.
A novel thing.
I love radio because when you're live on the air, you can't take anything back.
It's a different
skill set. It's not
just
like flicking the switch and being able to. You have to know what you're doing. And the people that you hear on the radio that have been doing it for years and years and years who are really good at it, you can do a podcast and you can recut it and recut it and edit it and edit it and edit it and sound amazing. How much work did you put into that?
A lot.
10 hours.
So it's a talent and it's a skill. And to be interesting and not bore the shit out of people.
Yeah.
That's a skill.
And it'll also be genuine.
That's very true. Yeah.
And not like sound like you're a freaking robot.
We used to call those people pukers. Hey, everybody. Coming up next. It's like, shut up. Just talk. Just talk to me. Just talk.
Do you, when you're on the radio, do you get to introduce new bands to the audience yourself? Or is it
That's what I've done on Boston Emissions for years.
Yeah. Who would you have introduced that no one else would have that I'd know?
Oh, my God.
Is that a dumb question?
I don't understand.
In terms of bands that
you got to listen to this band.
Discovered.
Every year at the Rumble, 24 new bands every year.
Yeah, I guess all those. That's right. What am I talking about? That's all those bands. That's right. Last question. We've been talking for a long time, and I know it's getting late. Do you have a last question? Because you've been quiet this time around. You've been more quiet than usual. Usually I can't shut you up.
What are you talking about? I've been talking.
Not very intelligently.
I can't say that
I've been talking very intelligently. I've been enjoying the conversation, too. This is like a live podcast radio.
A live podcast radio?
Live radio podcast.
Do you ever do live streaming or anything?
No.
He should not.
We could. I mean, we do our live events, and I'll edit that just really to...
It's not the same as live streaming.
Well, it's not,
She means, like, in the moment.
In the moment. Live. But we do take that, and that's pretty much 90% of what we say in the live event is
and then
public.
Well, that's true. And then you edit it down and post it as
yeah.
your
So it's a combination. Episode. You're right. Yeah. You can't take that stuff back, yep. but you can yep. get it out.
Yeah. I mean,
you can edit the shit that you don't want in there. If somebody says, fuck, now you have to edit that.
Right.
No, we can make it explicit. We had Walter Sigurd on. Are you kidding me? We couldn't. We had to edit the whole thing. It would be one big bleep if we didn't. We allow it. Just got to mark it as explicit. That's the problem. But you know, there is something to that's exciting about having live and having that.
There's nothing like it. If you haven't experienced it, if you are, I can only speak from my experience. You know, when you are. You're in there and you're setting up and you're playing a cool song and you get to talk about it. There's like a rush that comes from being a radio DJ that it's probably similar to playing a live set and you're like, yeah, I'm in my groove and just we're killing it and it just feels so good. And there's something about it when you're in it, when you're programming stuff and you're playing song. I want to play this song and I'm, you know what, this song's going to sound good after this when I do my show, when I do Boston Emissions,
which is now
when
just
I was
online
doing it live, it was that way all the time.
Yeah. You were held in very high regard by a lot of people in Boston in the music industry that I've met, bringing people together and joining the different communities of music. So, I think the Rumble is a big
nice
part
to
of
hear because that's what I want to do.
You can learn all about Boston Emissions and Angel's work at bostonemissions.com. You can also visit callingallcrows.org to learn what you can do to help provide a safe space for music so everyone can enjoy themselves at Boston venues. We'll let you know when our retrospective on the Rock and Roll Rumble comes out. We still have a few people to talk to first, but we are excited to publish that in the next month or so. Finally, please go to AboveTheBasement.com, where you can join us on Patreon, sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends. And remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique.
Hey, it is Chuck again. We would like to take a quick second to appeal to you to subscribe to this podcast, Above the Basement. There are many really good reasons to subscribe, but I'll tell you just two of them. You never have to check to see if we have new episodes, as they are automatically listed on your podcast app, and it doesn't cost you anything. Just go to abovethebasement.com/subscribe, where we have links to all the major podcast apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Radio Public, and more. There are instructions there on how to subscribe, or you can just click on one of the subscribe buttons. If you already have a podcast app on your phone, for the most part, you can just open the app and you will see a magnifying glass on the interface. Tap on that and type Above the Basement. You should see us right at the top. Tap on the subscribe button and you are done. And while you are there, please write us a nice review. Subscribes and reviews in the podcast universe are an important piece to reaching more listeners, so please take 15 or 20 seconds and help spread the word about ATB. Thank you for your support.